What up, though? This your boy DOC, and welcome to another episode of the No Offense Podcast. If you knew, the No Offense Podcast is an automatic disclaimer saying no offense to the sensitive people out here, because this the realest podcast in the world. So we talk that uncut, pure hip-hop shit, you feel me? On today's episode, we got a former G-Unit member that goes by the name of Spider Loke. Yeah, G-Unit when it was popping. And that's no shade to what's going on now. We know we just in a totally different era of G-Unit. This is back when the game, Young Buck, when it was a full Voltron machine. This is when Spider Loke was involved. And you know, here, I like to try to get the artist to be as transparent as possible. So yourself, myself, and everybody that's listening in the United States and abroad, I got to give a shout out to Canada, the UK, Australia, South Africa, Nigeria, Ireland, and it's too many names. I'll make sure at some point in time to give shouts out to every country abroad that's been listening, but I appreciate everybody that support, definitely. So I gotta give a shout out to some of the individuals. I said I was gonna do this, and I'm gonna do it every time I get the opportunity, for the individuals that's been leaving 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts. I gotta give a shout out to a gentleman named K-Fly, someone named Cash Out 313, someone that left a 5-star rating under the name Nina Beretta, much love, and Brandy. Right now, we're still on the goal to try to get up to 100 rankings, 100 5-star rankings. So go ahead and leave a 5-star rating and a positive review, and we'll pick your name and give you a special shout out in one of our upcoming episodes. So let's go ahead and jump into this interview, like I said, with Spider Loke. Appreciate you guys for tuning in. Let's go ahead and jump into this real shit. Peace. What up, though? This your boy DOC, and we got a very special guest on the platform today. If you'd like to go ahead and introduce yourself.
Spider Loke, the most easty he is. IEC is the Baymax boss.
SPI specialize in bloody ballistics, homicide, too high to study statistics. It's obvious that the monster thirsty for blood, and he ain't afraid of controversy. Lost scandals, represent my coast. G-Unit soldier, defend my post.
So I want to start it off where, you know, so where exactly are you from out there? Not, I know that terminology for y'all may be different. I'm not asking you like in a gang way, but like, where you from out there in California?
I'm from Los Angeles County. Mm-hmm. I was actually born in the city of Compton. The city of Compton no longer even contains a hospital, so the hospital has been torn down. But Los Angeles, I mean Compton, Watts, and the east side of South Central. Driving distance total, you can go back and forth in a matter of 20 minutes. So it's a real close proximity, Compton, Watts, at the east side of South Central. So I'm from that general area, close to Carson, Gardena, Long Beach, any of those areas you might be familiar with, Hawthorne.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what era would you say that you grew up in? Was that like the Reagan era out there, or after that, before that, or what era would you say you came up in out there?
Well, not really being familiar with those politicians and the exact era that they covered, I would probably describe it through the Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar era.
Mm, okay. So, like, seeing how the world is today, looking back on when you grew up, you know, in that area, how would you describe that time, you know, growing up while you was a kid?
Well, I mean, it depends on what perspective you're looking from. As I compare it to these times now, I would have to call it a time of a lot more accountability, definitely, where it seemed like just in general people kind of cared about how they present themselves. Now it seems like anything goes more so than it did back then.
Yeah. And do you think, I hear a lot of people, like sometimes when that question is asked, you know, some people say that it's, you know, our generation fault or the older generation fault that, you know, caused this generation to be like that. Do you look at it the same way, or do you think what do you think actually caused for this generation to be like the total opposite of the generation that's out here?
The more I study the effects of oppression and slavery, I'm convinced it's something that's been put in effect long before our generations. And I feel like we can't fault generation prior to us or the one prior to that. I think that as a people, there's a systematic attempt to hold us back in this society to dismantle us as a unified power. And I feel like that is the cause and the blame. I think each generation have shared this responsibility in falling for the lie and being fooled. But as a people, I think it's time for us to start realizing that the reason why we have these issues are not necessarily because we are a bad group of people, but there are the forces that be who have sought to make sure that we find ourselves in this position.
Right, right. So during that time when you was growing up, was gangs already heavy in your area, or that was all that was around you?
It was, yeah, I grew up in a very, very heavy gang-infested area. All the areas that you may have heard about through the media or read about, all the areas that niggas was rapping about, Compton, Watts, South Central, are the areas that I'm native to.
Right. Would you consider yourself as a person that was, like, more or less born in it, or was it a particular situation that ended up getting you, you know, to get into the streets?
I was born in the environment, but the actual activity was just attractive to me. I actually was fortunate enough to have a mother. I did have a single mother who gave it her best shot to keep me away from the actual activity that was going on in the streets right here. But it was just kind of hard because, you know, use public transportation to get back and forth to school, and you just right here. And being a mischievous boy, it was just hard to keep me away from it.
Right, right. Do you remember one?
I definitely had a choice.
Okay, all right. Because I was gonna ask that.
I definitely had a choice.
When that, let me say. So I guess I'll jump into that that part. Because I was gonna ask, was the streets the only option you had to make it in your current circumstances?
Not by far. I was an individual blessed with many gifts. Just natural gifts and talents. I was far from dumb. So if like anything I applied myself to, I could have had the opportunity to be successful at.
Definitely. Now, like if you were speaking to someone that was younger, like a, you know, 13, 14, 15 coming up, and with all the game information that you know now, and a lot of people would call the streets like a gift and a curse, would you like... Have you ever been faced with betrayal, and like, how would you explain that to someone that's maybe that age thinking about getting into the streets, to kind of tell them, you know, both sides of the game, where it ain't all glitz and glamour, that you can't be betrayed by, or if you ever even faced that with your, you know, people?
Well, I will quote, I got a new CD out right now, an EP called Politicking. It's a song called What's Happening featuring Slim 400 and Compton AD. Well, that's the wrong record. It's a song called Active featuring CX and K9 the Boss. And I say, the turf will turn you out and turn you in. Off top, gang enhancement gonna earn you 10. So with just that little two-bar segment, what I'm trying to tell to a youngster is, yeah, this turf right here where we from, it'll turn you out and have you out here doing wild shit. And the same niggas that invited you to come be a part of them and have you out here doing wild shit would then turn around and turn you in. And just because you down with them, fuck what your crime is, when you get in that courtroom, the judge gonna give you 10 years off top. So that's what you up against if you wanna try to follow in the footsteps of some of the fools like myself.
Now, during this time when you was coming up, were you already, you know, what was like your first introduction to the, you know, to rapping, like personally rapping or hearing music? Like, what was your first introduction to it?
What I can remember is being in the fifth or the sixth grade, not sure which one it was, because I had the same teacher for both grades. Shout out Miss Epps. And we had an assignment to write a story with all our spelling words. Then we had 20 spelling words weekly. And for some reason, I was motivated to put mine in a rhyme. When I got up in front of the class and started reading it, all the class started clapping onto a little beat, and I kind of rapped onto the beat, and there was birthed my career.
So let me ask you this. Like, when you first started, like, actually taking rap serious, was the homies or the people around you supportive of that, or did you have to separate yourself a little bit from them to be able to, you know, take your rap career serious?
I've always been fortunate enough, at least on the upfront, is to have people be supportive. Shout out my homie, rest in peace, Baby Draylon, Eastside Mob, Front Street Watts, because he was a young nigga, young ghetto rich nigga, who I remember inviting to the studio, and he'd be like, I ain't gonna go, cuz. He like, I just want one of my niggas to invite me to the studio when they make it. You know, I ain't never really had nobody really make it. But before I actually can consider myself have made it, my nigga passed. And a lot of times I sit back and just wish cuz or wonder and hope he has some type of idea what took place after he passed. Rest in peace, Crip. But yeah, I never had nobody really like express no doubt in my ability. Nobody that was right up around me. I think everything that I was capable of doing was pretty apparent and obvious to anyone, to all my peers.
Right. Okay. Yeah, the reason why I kind of asked that question, like even for myself, I may see like, okay, if I take on a new endeavor that may be different from other people. And I guess that is the way where you could tell who your real friends are, real family is, like it, being in a situation where people may not be supportive. Like, how do you maneuver through that? You know what I mean? Like, for me.
Now, with the ups and downs of things not going quite as way to plan, and you having to find a fortification within yourself to stick it out, then you start finding out who's on your side. Because, you know, my career took a natural course of progression to where there was never really any room for people to doubt. For me, getting out of prison, getting on the record with Cam, then meeting Sebo, then meeting Suge, and then meeting G, and anyone from close around me, it seemed like I knew what I was doing. Things were going right.
Right.
Now, from the G unit, not quite doing what it was supposed to do, and then it started to look like the first time progress was going the other direction, and me sticking it out. Then you start seeing people have different suggestions on what you might need to be focusing on and not being as supportive. You got to show you might not be able to round up as many homies as quick as you could beforehand. You know, yeah, you see it's different. When you get to that struggle, that up climb again.
Right. So around what years was it? So your first feature was with Cam first?
Well, I wouldn't say feature,
but like maybe from across the way.
That's a good way to say it. First time I actually did something to let me know I was going to be on for it, being on somebody's shit. I could go in the store, tell somebody to go in the store and pick up a CD with my name on it. Yeah, Cam.
How did y'all end up plugging together?
Well, ironically enough, my neighborhood and his is quite close. And I remember being a youngster, going up to 99th Street School. They had some little courts where we could dunk on. Niggas used to go run basketball games up there. And I used to go up there and run, being aware of Cam, not really aware if he was aware of me or not. And then years after that, after going to prison and getting out, my homeboy Wino from 190, cuz was working with Coolio and doing some shit. And he knew about just about everybody that was on the rap scene on the West Coast. So I started going through there to Wino House, fucking with Wino, Blue Da Vinci. That's where I first encountered Blue from 1902, him and Spade. They was a group called the Lower Class, shout out Spade. And that's where Cam Reed appeared in my life, because he was over there working with Wino. And Wino and Cam put out an album together called Camnesia on Part-Time Records, and I was affiliated with the homie in the label, and Cam let me get on his album because he was doing it with the homie at that time.
Okay. And was like those early works and stuff like that is what end up catching the attention of like G-Unit and the 50 at that time, or what would you say is what made y'all, you know, catch wind of each other?
I never had the total depth of understanding of how aware 50 was of me prior to meeting me. From the moment he met me, I would have had to imagine he was not aware of me whatsoever. And then after having a few telephone conversations with him and trying to like figure out in my mind how I was going to be able to just discussed with him this Suge situation I had just went through. I realized he was already aware of that and told me he didn't give a fuck about Suge and how he felt about what we was trying to do. But then we never went into conversation about the past that for him to give me any idea that he was aware of my existence prior to meeting me. So if I had to just go from facts, 50 was sold on dealing with me within the first few moments of he met me because I interrupted him having a very, very important conversation, very serious conversation with Young Buck in front of a lot of people, where it was the first time Young Buck had spoke to 50 after the G-Unit Spinner had became stolen. Mm. And I walked into a trailer and 50 was getting on his head about that subject. And shortly after entering the trailer, I just started drowning him out by rapping. And everything that you know for me and 50 to go through together started from that moment.
Mm. Okay.
Thank you.
And you...
The same way it happened with Buck in the first place. When I met Buck in Atlanta, he was talking to a room full of people about the same incident. It was a very serious tone conversation where he had the floor totally to himself. And I just started drowning him out without permission, over drowning, and started rapping. And that's how we started our G-Unit conquest.
Word. Like pushing your craft on him to let him know that you was there.
Doing something that is totally the wrong thing to do, something I could not advise anyone else to do, something that probably would never work again. Nobody gives a fuck about nobody's acapella flow enough to sign him. It just goes to show the spirituality of my experience. I don't have the expertise. I've never had an appropriate management team. I've never had any experts really attempting to help me maximize my exposure. It's just been me in the sense of Moses at the Red Sea dropping the stick. I just trust God. It's like I get to the ocean and God say drop the stick. So I've just been dropping the stick and I've seen mountains move. So that's what I've been using. No way in the world I could tell you I would ever repeat that moment of just drowning somebody out that I never met that can actually provide something for me. That was very rude of me. So for me to be able to like trust my back intuition to drown these men out and for it to work, it's just deep.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to take advice. It's hard for me to take advice when you can make backwards decisions like that and they work for you. It's like advice is like real hard for me to take because I got a backwards kind of math that kind of adds up for me.
Yeah. You normally the type of person that just to do what other people not going to do, or when everybody going left, you go right?
I mean, I definitely crowd. I mean, I'm not a fool. If I'm somewhere and I see the whole crowd just running, yeah, I'm going to pay attention. But I pretty much believe that I've been blessed with a gift of first thought leadership. And I believe that God communicates through the universe to me directly. I feel like sometimes I get the message first. If you're always looking to other people for the message, you'll never be able to receive your message directly.
Mm. Yeah, that's real. That's real.
Reading the Bible, trying to figure out what some people went through with God thousands of years ago, and God is still living today trying to communicate with somebody.
Yeah.
Holler at me, Lord. I'm listening.
Right. Yeah, I feel that. I respect that for real. When was the first time, like, so after that process went through, you know, you rapping and everything, even with the situation with Buck, when would you say, because I see as of recently, you know, you voiced your opinion about stuff, because I, you know, later in the interview, I was going to ask you, like, what made you get to that point now, but since we already on it, but, like, what was the very first thing? Was it the situation where 50 and them was doing the live stream and you seen the lack of support for you as an artist? Was that the first time you noticed something was wrong with, like, your promotion? Or was it anything behind the scenes that really was going on?
I won't say that was the first thing. And I know you're trying to be precise, but I really appreciate precision. And I've tried to avoid from giving opinions and just sticking to the facts.
Right.
I haven't really caught myself speaking on giving my opinion on many things lately. But I have been releasing some facts just based on that was a moment right then and there. Whether it was the first moment, I can probably go back to that moment as one of the moments, like they say, the straw that broke the camel's back.
Mm.
You know, like if you let a nigga piss on you and tell you it's water, you the fool.
Right.
So the word hating is what it is. Anytime a CEO finds himself in that position and he responds the way 50 did, I don't need nobody to tell me that. Say no.
We just left it even at the question itself.
I've had niggas call me when that first happened, excited, trying to tell me, hey, 50 just mentioned you like it was a good thing. I'm like, cuz, I had to look at it again, trying to see it the way they saw it. I didn't see nothing good in it. Well, shortly after that, I spoke to him. He apologized, blamed it on some gang shit, other shit, and he was going in the public often, not mentioning my name. And a few days after that, I challenge you for anyone to do the research. A few days after that, he was on 106 in Port, and he had just recently apologized when I questioned him about that interview. And so when on 106 in Port, he gave me a shout out. It was about 2 or 3 days afterwards. And then after that, I didn't hear much more mention of me.
And y'all never fully got past that particular situation. See, that's the crazy thing, I guess, from the outside looking in. I would wonder why a person would, sign a person or bring them in and then not want to push them.
Let me tell you what happened, bro. It's a problem with 50 Cent relationship that he had with the distributors that caused him to have to make decisions that he probably didn't plan on making. Once he realized his name is Jackson, that is already a slave name. Then a nigga was so much feeling himself, he tried to put Interscope on his name, bro. So when you think you that big of a nigga that you can add Interscope in your name, you have fucking lost it. You somehow thought your relationship had surpassed Dr. Dre's with Jimmy Iovine. You was running around calling yourself Curtis Interscope Jackson. I wonder why he doesn't put that in his name no more. I still have my same name. I'm Spotter Lope, No Brain, the most East. That's who I am. I don't have to change my name. Why is he no longer Curtis Interscope Jackson?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So once you just, without even knowing all the details of what that entailed or included, just think the nigga thought he was Curtis Interscope Jackson. That theory goes, let you know, his head was fucked up, man. I believe he had intentions on doing the right thing at one point, but I believe he was very selfish, very self-centered. You know, that nigga was so discombobulated at one point. My cousin was in security, Big Dame, for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He's security for Chris Brown right now. But I remember it was a time when Big Dame was realizing my communication level had changed to 50 Cent, and he wasn't appreciated. So they was out here by USC rehearsing for an award show. So that nigga Big Dame was calling me like, man, come down here right now, man. I'm watching this nigga rehearse right now. I just talked to him 5 minutes ago. And I don't think Big Dame was even security guard for 50 no more, but he was there at the rehearsal with him. So he pumped me up to come down there and holler at 50, trying to see, what kind of rhythm I could get reestablished because Sif wasn't really communicating correctly. So I'm sitting there talking to 50, and this is when he was preparing the album to come out around the same time with Kanye West.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get at him about my release and, what can I do, what's happening. And that nigga told me, look, Spider, you're going to have to fall back because they're looking for my album to save hip-hop right now. If my album doesn't do well, hip-hop is dead.
Yeah.
Hey, he was serious as a motherfucker, cuz. That nigga was serious.
Yeah.
I was just looking at him like, man, it's still different, man. He was just becoming different right before my eyes, man.
Yeah, yeah. Was there anyone particularly in G-Unit that you built a bond with, like Young Buck? Y'all was one of the closest ones at that time?
Yeah, me and Young Buck was tight. First of all, he brought me to the table. So, and then Young Buck wanted to be a Crip so bad, he just gravitated to me and all my mannerisms and my style. So, as much as Buck brought me to the table and when it came to the industry and things of luxury and richness, he was my big homie. He couldn't really function that way because he looking at me like a big homie because he wanted to be a gangbanger. But that was my boy, and me and Yayo, we hit it off pretty well just because I was an ex-con, and then Yayo was fresh out of prison. I think, most of the New York niggas, the OG New York niggas didn't really have a Crip and Blood element. So it seemed like most of the niggas that I clicked with from New York felt like that we were the same kindred spirit is because we had dead time.
Right.
It was a newer generation with the Crip and Bloody. You know, so Yayo seemed to have a lot of respect for me to the point where he held up his album when he got out of prison to allow me to be able to make it. I really appreciated that. And I just generally became the favorite of all the laymen, all the homies, everybody that was around. Buck Crew, Banks Crew, 50 Ho Crew, all the regular niggas fucked with the low. Just look how, even though New York, when it comes to states or regions, is the last to sign up for this gangbang shit, they finally did as well. So when you see that Los Angeles has been responsible for basically setting the temperature, the tempo, the trend of the streets around the whole country now, it's kind of like easy to understand how someone authentically from the Mecca of that region with such an impeccable reputation would become a favorite. Because even if you look at Trav that run around with Slow Bucks the Rap Nigga, that's my little homie. He's a blood now, but he was a young kid when I was around before he had much thug in him at all. I watched when he started going through it growing up and going through his transition. He even came out here and lived in Cali for a while and really got some of that real gangbang essence in him. I see him now. He's a grown man, and he looked like something to be, you know, reckoned with. But I haven't really been able to chance to be around him since he's been out here pushing. But that was my little homie.
Right.
And that's a Reno. When I see Money Ron, that was my nigga. I fucked with the goons over there. The goons fucked with me, although I was a rapper.
Yeah. How do you look at, like you were saying, at that particular time, you know, the gangbang influence wasn't really in NYC yet. How do you view it now, like from the outside looking in, of what's going on in different regions, not just specifically New York or New York? Like, how do you look at how it's being represented? Do you think it's watered down because of the music industry, or do you think it's being represented in a real way?
I believe it's watered down in general overall. I believe some regions are less watered down than actually the Mecca, because believe it, out here it's watered down. So I believe that I don't really have a personal feeling about each different area's representation of it. I think it's gotten so big and beyond us that it doesn't really matter how I or we feel. I feel honored to do, I still feel honored though, whether I should or not, I feel honored to be a part of the original format. And I feel honored, even what y'all might not know, when it comes to Los Angeles, the C-Rose on the east, the rest came from the west. I feel honored to be part of the actual original set. So, you know, it's expanded, it's changed. I think when it comes to the actual industry and people being able to represent it, I think that since everyone has a voice, certain things should not be tolerated. And when motherfuckers start mixing the promotion of homosexuality and rainbow with this gangbang shit, that's when I tap out all right. The way. You'll fuck around here. You know, I just can't get with that. Raising young men, you know, and it's such a Babylonian society, man, of America, it's like these rappers don't hold each other to no morals, no accountability.
You think,
like, nobody thought it was funny that Mr. C was getting head from transvestite? Everybody that was questioned about it said something all respectful and humble. Nobody even laughed, my nigga.
Yeah.
That's not the hip hop that I'm a part of, bro. I'm a voice for the rebels, the niggas that don't give a fuck. That's the hip hop that I support. That's where we come from.
Right. You think it's more because people value the bag or the money more than valuing the values and morals of what supposed to came with it?
Shout out Colin Kaepernick. Shout out Muhammad Ali. Yes, sir, I do.
Yeah.
I feel like reality is just very distorted for black people, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's like having that bag, motherfuckers will give it all up for that bag.
Yeah. You ever been faced with...
I don't understand why every black motherfucker in the NFL don't take a knee. I don't get it. Like, why just don't every nigga do it? Like, then what they gonna do?
They the ones bringing in the money by actually being out there playing. I don't know if
it... Exactly. And there's nothing illegal or disrespectful or derogatory about taking a knee in representation of all the black blood that's been shed out here in these streets without no retribution. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with taking a knee. That's like a very solid thing to do, and they still got niggas spooked into doing it.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad. Like, because once it's so many of them, you know, if it's a couple hundred of them, they can't fire all of them. You know what I'm saying? Or that's going to affect the league. You know what I'm saying? That's like...
Exactly.
I don't get it. I don't, you know, certain things people would stand for, and unfortunately Cap going through what he going through, it seemed like, you know, I don't think he in it to be a martyr or just to be remembered, that he actually want to make a real change, but it's like everybody got to be down with it as well, you know what I'm saying, and not just tweet about it and stuff like that. I think people that got caught up in society and thinking just because something, you know, goes viral or we get enough tweets that that make a change in real life, and it don't, you know what I mean? You ever, you know, encounter any type of situations like being out there, I'm pretty sure, you know, like dealing with the police in that type of manner where you may have thought that it was going to get ugly?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, keep it real. We are in a condition of cowardice, even myself, because goddamn right, I've been violated, disrespected by the police, and I've tucked my tail. Just based on the fact that I know I can't win as an individual. Losing sight of the martyr idea or what a dying exhibition of courage might do for the whole movement, I done let the police disrespect me plenty of time right here in the bottom of the beach, man. That's what they do. Right here in these environments, they pull it. I left the motherfucking car lot with a brand new car, drove 5 minutes from Long Beach to Compton. Police blurt me, pull me over, walk up on the side of the car with the windows down, reach in, grab my wrist and tell me, turn the car off and get out. I say, why? They said, you got paper plates. I said, no, I just left the car lot 5 minutes ago. All the paperwork's in the glove compartment. They didn't give a fuck. They pulled me out, gaffled me up, put me in the back seat. And when I got to talking to them and going off on them and having them interchange with me in conversation, the bottom line was they did it because they wanted to and they could. Mm. And I know I deserve it. I think they deserve to be spat upon and maybe kicked or something, but I didn't do all that. I sat there, talked my little shit, and then they let me out the car and I got on. But that's where we live. You could drive outside of our areas into any other white area. We don't go through that. Right. Then in these same areas, my mother doesn't go through that. My woman doesn't go through that. It's only black men that look like they're not senior citizens. Anybody driving and you're not a senior citizen, you're a black male around here, they treat you any old kind of way, my nigga.
Yeah, yeah. That's real. That's real. That's like I always say, it feel like it don't matter if you are out here, quote unquote, in the streets and doing crime, or even if you were a black man that went and got his PhD, for some reason, to the police, you always going to look like a threat. You know what I'm saying? Because you could be out here getting it the legal way and everything and pull up in, like you say, pull up in a new Benz. How he, they automatically look at how he get that. He don't supposed to have that type of mentality. He must be doing something wrong to have it, because we know this is set up for him not to get it. How did he get it? You know what I'm saying? So it's like a double-edged sword living out here, you know, because that was a discussion we was kind of having on my Instagram the other day. I put up a video of a young guy got pulled over, and he was just talking crazy shit to the police.
Hey, nah, man, I have my seatbelt on. You can try that bullshit. I have my seatbelt on, nigga.
Okay.
So what?
Are you refusing to sign?
Do I have to sign it?
I'm giving you the option to sign it. Are you
refusing? Do I have to sign it? If I don't sign it, will I go to jail?
Are you refusing to sign it?
If I don't sign it, will I go to jail?
No.
Are you sure?
What did I just say?
So if I don't sign it, you will not pull me out this car and take me to jail.
That is correct.
You will not issue a warrant out later so they can take me to jail later.
If you do not comply with the citation or appear in court,
boy, your breath stank like ass, man. Oh, my mama, nigga.
You will have a warrant.
All right, man, give me the fucking shit, man.
Hey, are you going to sign it or no?
I'm going to sign it, you dumbass nigga, duh. What you thought, nigga? If I say give me it, I'ma sign it, nigga.
Well, then sign it, sir.
Give me the fucking pen, man. I don't want to reach in your hand and you pop me. No, you mother.
And one person left a comment like, oh yeah, that's what people should do to the police. Fuck them crackers, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And then 99% of everybody else, even myself, I'm like, man, when I get pulled over, just give me my ticket. If I decide to fight it, I'll fight it later. You know what I'm saying? But I want to make it back home to my family. Now, I don't know,
right? That,
you know, I felt, even when I put that up, I'm like, this probably going to be an unpopular opinion, because especially the state that we going in, you know, what we in right now, just give me my ticket, let me go, instead of arguing with you. Because like you said, I'm in a lose-lose situation. I can't win this battle unless I'm going to do some crazy shit and then have to be on the run.
But That's what I want to add it in. I forgot to add in earlier my statement. What they do is they tell you, I don't care how intelligent I speak to them to let them know they're out of line. They tell me they can do me like this because we're in a high crime environment, a high crime area. And they quote a little case law. And that's what it is. We're not intelligent enough to even know if the case law is appropriate. But they'll say so-and-so versus so-and-so, I could do this. And then I've seen people on the internet like have appropriate responses and never get out their car. But the fact that I'm a two-time loser, I already feel like it's not going to work out for me. I've had the sheriffs like, all right, we'll call a sergeant out then. Because I know from being in the streets long enough, you can demand a sergeant to come out.
Mm.
So, but I stopped doing that because the sergeant come out and all they do is agree with the motherfucking police that was already there.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? They come out, they're going to mediate and be fair and listen to you. And then they say, well, based on what I've heard, you still have to comply with the officer's request. So this shit is just a, I say, we got to, what we need to do, these areas that are heavily populated by us that are considered high crime areas, we got to do our best as individuals to either get out of these areas or we got to reconstruct them. Because I see gentrification is in full effect around here. Every time a black leaves out of a residence, there's not a black to replace them, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's construction going on every corner. The potholes we've been crying about all our lives are getting filled up everywhere, my nigga.
Yeah.
Brand new. They putting big ass shopping centers, fly shit. They talking about the NFL's coming to Carson. The NFL is coming to Inglewood. All that shit y'all hear about, the crime areas is all in between there. They want niggas out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, see, I wonder, like, so even if we move somewhere, you know, they moving us, not even, like, purposely wanting to move, or even for the ones that's wanting to move, what do you think as far as, like, just the dynamic or the relationship between each other, taking, gangs out of it, period, just on a day-to-day basis with the issues that we have within each other, what do you think where the start should be at, you know, to, because the only way we can overcome the oppression or the system is unity within us. But then that seems like that's a whole nother story, and some people say, oh, that's coon talk, when we should be focusing on what they're doing to us.
I think the gangs have gotten so saturated that the lack of the gang violence is going to come without the gangs actually ceasing to exist. I think the fact that so many people are participating on such a watered down level and coexisting and attending the same functions without any violence is, it's kind of taking the sting out of even the gang affiliation. So I think that's going to kind of like water down the actual black on black crime constantly. It already has. So I don't know how you would start a movement if just stop saying Crip, stop saying Blood. That's almost like stop saying nigga.
Right.
I don't think we have to stop saying niggas if that's how they stop being quote unquote niggas.
Because
I feel like there's no more, no, nothing more powerful than take a word that was used to just destroy your whole soul, mentality, and everything that you exist, and then take that word and flip it and make it so fly that the very people that used it to try to destroy you now want the right to be called one themselves.
Mm.
And that's such a powerful effect to be able to have on anything as black people. I think we just have to internalize everything that is ill with us. And if we focus on it together, we're going to come with a solution, because outside input and what this person or those group of people might have to say, what we need to do is going to keep us confused, bro. We all get in the same room, and I'm talking about theoretically, and have this conversation amongst ourselves, because nobody wants to see their son, their nephew, their brother, or their father killed behind this shit. And if you look at every black man as one of those because they are that to your brother, that's when we got to start looking at this shit, man.
Yeah. Do you ever find yourself, or, you know, where the younger ones in the rap game or not, you know what I'm saying, come up to you to try to get advice? Because there's always this big discussion about the, you know, the gap between the generations. The young ones say, oh, the OGs don't give us no game. And then vice versa say, oh, y'all don't want to listen. Like, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I can always say niggas like Dub C, Ice Cube, Mac 10, even with the shit I went through with Snoop, it was times, Master P. These are the OGs in the game as far as music is concerned that I could always pick up the phone and get some game from. I think that the gap between the G's now and the youngster now is the smallest gap that has ever been. It's almost not no gap. It's like the mentalities of our people have been so dwarfed that the teenagers and the 30-something-year-olds are talking just like each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like it's kind of hard. You walk into a pack of niggas, it's hard to tell who 18 and who 30.
Right. And I wonder, is that now, with saying that, you know, it ain't a big difference between maybe how, you know, the talk, the language, addressing, do you think that's what's possibly making them not want to listen? Or do you think that you still run into situations?
You got a hard time listening to somebody who is basically at the same spot in the race as you are, and they've had 10, 15, maybe 20 years to be running. But I'm going to listen to you for if I got a flyer car just as fly as you. I'm smoking just as much weed as you. My shoes switch up. My shoe game is just as cold as yours. My belt game. I got bitches. I'm having money. What am I listening to you for? And this is the mentality of the average young nigga.
Right.
See, the dope game is open. Ain't no bunch of crack out here on these streets. So it ain't no bunch of niggas, everybody on every corner running around with no pocket full of money. Now, have some money nowadays. It's money around, but you got to get up and go get it. You're not just going to sit on your ass and a bunch of smokers going to come bring you cash.
Right.
It's not happening. So young niggas, it's not. They not looking at no older. Any older nigga that they know getting some money basically is going to work. And unless you thinking about going to work, you're not really getting no game from no older niggas in the streets out here because the older niggas don't know what to do. It's the niggas that's out here right now that's knowing how to get this new money because old niggas knew how to sell crack. Ain't no crack selling, my nigga.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
young niggas it's a new twist out here with these new, it's new licks out here, it's new games out here. You feel me?
Yeah. As far as on some music, what is that?
Okay, go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
No, I was gonna say on some music tip, like what's the works of the new Baymac? Is that it gonna be an album EP?
It's an EP just dropped this week called Politicking.
Politicking.
Baymac is the lifestyle, the movement, not only the label, it's the clothing line. Baymac.bitcartel.com. You go get your fly gear right there. It's also the label. It's also the lifestyle. It's just be about your money at all costs. If you ain't about your money in this society, you really ain't about nothing. So it's kind of like we was in a Monopoly game. You got to have your money to play Monopoly. Living in America is a Monopoly game. You got to have your money, man. So we Baymacking all day, every day. If you get up and go to work at a school, a job, an office, on a construction site, you are a Baymacker. No matter anybody that get up every day and do what they got to do to get their money is Baymacking. So I feel like not only is something that I internalize, I feel like anybody that encounters the concept of Baymacking feel like it's something they can grasp.
Right, definitely. And the album.
Nobody to pay with their money.
Not at all. No, that's real. And the project that you got out right now, you say it's out everywhere where people can get it?
All platforms. The new EP is Politicking. Also, I just dropped this week the Lost Takes on all platforms. But Politicking, I just want to give you the lineup for the niggas that I'm proud to be working with. They up and coming. West Coast Staples, my nigga Fastlane Fig, a.k.a. Fig Newton, Trey Legend, G5, Pipe the Snipe, Dash Dillinger, the OG on that motherfucking long time coming. We finally got one in. T-Fo, Compton AD, Slim 400, Silent J on some production. My nigga The Chill on some production. If I forget anybody, please forgive me. I love all y'all. That shit is slapper. Politicking, go get it now. We got 4 videos already out. Oh, the Outlaws on that thing. Posted at the trap featuring the Outlaws. We got What's Happening, Slim 400, and Compton AD. All Gone video coming up real soon. The teaser is out now, but I also got the active video with K9 the Boss and C-Heck. They also on the project, so Politicking is going up. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Spiderlook Most Easty, as well as my Instagram. That's where I'm at. We got a lot of shit coming up in the future. Shooting film. Shout out for Arata for Life Film Production Company, my nigga. J Fifth, we just functioning. Shout out Eastside Herb. I gotta say what up to my little brother in Arizona, Derek. Love you, bro. Shout out Big Spider. We just getting money, man. Just trying to stay active, proactive, and positive.
Right, right. And I see with the different names that you named on that album, you know, it's a mixture of different people, different, you know, neighborhoods, different sides. I'm pretty sure to be from California, that's a beautiful thing where everybody is willing to, you know, really much deal with each other when it comes to making this music.
Yes. That's one thing the rest of the country has to say. We always have been at least that responsible with the way we displayed the musical game. You know, shout out to Mac 10, Ice Cube, even before that, Leon Haywood, and they was putting the Banging on Wax projects together, even though it was flip sides. We never have actually allowed this music and this game banging to cross up to where it caused a problem. Suge Knight had a movement in front of the whole world with Crips and Bloods working in unison. I want y'all to know that the misconception that Crips and Bloods just hate each other is a misconception. We hate each other about as much as the New England Patriots and the motherfucking Buffalo Bills do. But when we get out there to go to war, we just go to war. Warriors love the activities of war. And when you fall in love with the activities of war and the concepts of war, you have to have an enemy. You know, it's just like how when you go over there to fight Vietnam, I've seen movies where they go in there slaughtering shit. When they get down to the last row and them niggas throw their hands up and put the guns down, they don't kill them.
Mm.
So, you know, it's like Alexander the Great. It was said that while he was on his conquest of conquering the world, they were just cutting heads off, fucking shit up. He said, but his men were so bloodthirsty that once they conquered everything, they start fighting each other and just sticking their swords on each other. So I think the tribal warriorism in us, this gangbanging appealed to it, and it started a snowball that was out of control. But I don't think black people had a capacity to hate each other. I think we've been fooled to believe we hate each other. We really love each other. The whole world loves us. The whole world is attempting to emulate and mimic everything we do. And if we can stop and start looking at each other, and we look at each other, let's look at the space between us as a mirror, and let's see the things that make us alike and start loving each other, man. I've been guilty of not doing it as well. I'm not speaking from a position of authority or leadership with this. I'm saying let's all start to do it better together. I want to hold myself more accountable as well.
Word. That's real. You know, I'm hoping with more individuals, you know, like yourself, that is in position where people do follow your movements and look up to you in a certain type of fashion, where these type of words will help change, even as one or two or 100, you know, slowly but surely, so we're not in the same position 100 years later talking about, you know, the same thing from the same position, you know.
Chances are you're going to have a son, and you don't want your son to be in the streets and a pack of niggas approaching him with some energy he can't handle because they want to know where he's from and want to do something to him behind that bullshit. You don't want to leave that for your... I got an 11-year-old son who I attempt my hardest to raise as just a straight young man, no gang affiliation. Of course, I cannot hide who I am. He is fully aware. But he looks like a young man. He's 11. He looks a little older than he could be, but we walked into a gas station, many more together. He kind of went to the back to get him something to drink. We put it together. But some young teenage niggas that was gangbangers, they like banged on me real hard. And like I was with my 11-year-old son, walked up on the scene. I didn't necessarily turn it down. I knew I was in an environment that was friendly to my gang. So I didn't anticipate it getting out of hand once I told them where I was from. But I kind of felt bad that my son witnessed this happening. But it's like it really made me do a lot of thinking, because as we was driving away, I said, I asked him, what was you scared? He was like, no. I said, what was you thinking? He was like, shit, I was ready to fight. I love my little nigga, my junior. But it's just like he didn't really understand what was going on, but he knew it was that bullshit. You feel me?
Right, right, yeah.
So, and I hate the fact that that's the temperature out here. So, you know, I call on all my counterparts and all my peers, my nigga. Just based on that type of shit, my niggas, we got to do better, my niggas. You feel me?
Right.
We got to do better.
Like, is that your only child?
No, I have 6 children, 3 boys, 3 girls. My boys are 10. They're not twins. 2 10s and 1 11. My girls are, 1 is 6, the other is 15, the other is 18.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, I got the right part. Appreciate it.
Well, how did that, you know, be going into fatherhood? Did you start having kids in your 20s or younger?
In my 20s, yes. Early 20s.
Okay. How did parenting, you know, change you up? Did it change you overnight towards your outlook towards things, or was it gradual?
cool.
With the girls, it didn't change me much at all. I don't know why, but it just seemed like I was able to just still be myself and love my daughters. What happened was, I noticed the main changes is when I had the young men, and I was more responsible of setting an example of what to copy.
Yeah.
An example, when I found myself trying to show them what they
be through example, I started seeing myself just making natural changes without even thinking about it. And I thank God for the process of life, because I've never had to try to be better for my boys or try to do better. Once I knew they was watching and they were copying, I just started making different decisions. And I see that's how it works, and I appreciate that. And it even got to a point where, you know, my hiatus from the rap game was kind of like triggered by my desire to be available and accountable to getting them a solid foundation set. And because they weren't all under the same roof and I wasn't in just a direct relationship that was able to help me just channel all that, it was kind of sporadic here and there. I kind of had to fall back to make myself more accessible to them. And thus, now that that foundation is somewhat set, I feel more comfortable being less accessible and more accessible to what my obligations to push my career would be. So we back on this campaign. I had to actually ask my young niggas, is it okay for me to turn back into a gangster rapper, because I was kind of confused and bamboozled who I was supposed to be in their eyesight. And I was just trying to be their daddy, trying to be Curtis, a good guy, a goofy guy, and carry myself like that as much as possible, so I won't never give them the idea that it was cool to be what we consider cool or a thug or a gangster. And I think I was giving them a kind of a slightly misconception of who I was. So once I started realizing they were getting exposed to, you know, they go over to cousin house, they have older brothers, older sisters, they getting exposed to some of my past on YouTube and shit from other people. I'm not really fooling them. I had to just get them like, look, I'm daddy. I'm the goofy daddy y'all know. But guess what? When I go to work, I know how to be a cold gangster, and I could go get some beans for us. And they gave me permission to put my gangster jacket back on. So that's why you see me locate a bit more than I have been in the past years, because my kids gave me permission. They promised me they won't follow footsteps either.
Word. Well, it's good that y'all, you know, had that type of communication line where that, you know, that door is open for you to speak to them, and they understand, and, you know, vice versa. You know what I mean? I think that's a gift with a gift within itself. A lot of people don't have that type of, I think some parents try to hide it to the point where then when the kids find out, they maybe feel like they've been lied to, or, you know,
betrayed
in some type of way. You know, as far as, you know, having daughters and seeing the times that we live in right now, like the world is, I said, I was born in 81. So now 2018, the world is totally different than me growing up during the 80s and 90s and stuff like that. Like for your daughters with this, I'm not going to necessarily talk about like the Me Too movement, but just with the women empowerment movement going on and everything, like how do you think that's something that your daughters, you want them to go off into the lane of what we see, how the world is going now, or you kind of give them the game still from a guy perspective, but still want them to, you know, wear the jacket as a woman, you know?
It's such a hard to find out, decide exactly your position on some of these issues. As a male, when you have female children, it's just really such a balancing trick. It's crazy, because I remember my daughter, who just recently graduated high school in 10th grade, she was actually accosted by an individual, groped her on the bus, on a city bus. And like...
you said bumped her on the city bus?
No, he actually reached out and touched her and squeezed on her. Squeezed on her. A grown man. And I kind of... It was a full bus, but he did it to the point where she was froze. She couldn't scream or do none of that shit. So the only thing she could manage to do was to start a video on her cell phone that he couldn't notice, that just tore her thigh where he was trying to touch her. And she recorded his hand doing the bullshit, and he didn't really realize it. So I remember the type of rage I felt just knowing she went through that and not being able to save her from being on that bus totally. She had to get back on it eventually. And I remember her calling me, telling me she see the same dude. Oh, if you could imagine how I broke my neck to catch this bus on the route, my nigga, and I didn't quite catch it in time. But the fact that she was actually approached like that and I couldn't do nothing to help her, I got to be able to support whatever a female, such as my daughter, says she needs for her to be safe out here. Right. I don't give a fuck. Me too is the movement, then me too. You feel me? I'm with whatever she with, my nigga. I have had to have my whole concept on women and the way they dress and a lot of things challenged because coming up, you see, like you say, when we came up, stretch pants that we see commonly today would be considered disgusting, inappropriate, and it'd be for hoes only. You wouldn't be able to wear those. So as they became popular in the last 10, 15 years, my daughter, because they were popular, I couldn't stop her from wearing them, but I made sure you always had something tied over your waist or you had a shirt that covered up your ass, just bottom line.
Right.
And now that she's graduated from high school and we went out to eat the other night, I guess she feel like I ain't got to stick to them rules no more. It was just crazy walking behind her into the restaurant like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Nah, I mean, it's out of my hands now. I can't mandate her to do anything different. And she's not doing anything so different. Everybody's doing it, but just to me as an individual, I have to learn to accept something that I actually don't approve of. So it's all about growing, I guess.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, come on. I just had my first child. She's only one now, so I got some years. I know you're supposed to start, you know, as young as possible once they can start comprehending, but I haven't got to that point yet.
Hey, from you being from our time frame, with the morals I know you possess, and the way the world is, you go, boy, you waited this late, your daughter in trouble. I know daddy ain't playing.
Yeah.
Shit is so way out, and you got that mentality I had with my first daughter back then. Yeah, you going to have, oh, man. Is your how about the mom? She pretty liberal, or is she old-fashioned?
She's super overprotective. Like, she... super baby, or I see where it's gonna be, where I will be the disciplinarian. I'm more militant with things, just how my pops and everybody, my uncles and everybody was. You know what I'm saying? I just hope it don't end up causing a conflict. Like, we all in the same household, but I hope it don't cause a conflict where it's like, oh, daddy the mean one. So I gotta find that balance, and it's not that I'm being mean. It's just like I pretty much know what you're gonna face dealing with us when you get older. You know what I mean? I want you to see things for what it is. I still want you to be a woman, but I want you to see things through our eyes too. You know what I'm saying? I don't want you to be naive and gullible out here.
If you don't mind, if I give you any advice, all I would suggest is whatever disagreements you and your woman have on parenting, discuss them before you approach the child. Always approach the child if you can at a united front. I think that goes a long way, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once the kids see they can play one child against the other and get their way this way and the other, you set yourself up for chaos as parents, man. That's all I'm going to say. I ain't no motherfucking advisor, but you say it's your first one. I've been at it for a while. If I could share anything, I'd like to share that. That's it.
Word, definitely. I'm assuming you have faced that, like, personally to be able to see.
Oh, yes. Yes, bro. Yes. And I also saw how I was raised without my father in the household, and yet my mama never challenged, you know, and my daddy wasn't like around like that, like all the time. But still, my mama had nothing but amazing things to say about him. Only thing that she might not have promoted that he was involved in was the fact that my mother was a stout Christian. So anything he did that went against those traditions, she couldn't just condone. But yeah, it's like,
Right.
I know my parents' situations, my nigga, I've had a lot of influence in situations, but then you'll run into a disgruntled female and she'll just purposely not support something that you really feel strongly about, and you'll have to watch it not be established. And she really doesn't feel one way or the other, but just because she's spiteful towards you and she feel like you won't appreciate it, she'll allow your children to be involved in things that they really don't need to be involved with, man. Allow them to make decisions that are not best for them in order to spite you.
Yeah. And were you was able to overcome all that, or you still faced that battle today?
I say today I lost some battles. I believe that I'm going to win the war. I think in the long run that I've been blessed with pretty good counterparts in all my co-parenting situations, and I think deep down we all want the same thing, what's best for the child. At different times, different emotions and shit make you lose sight of what the overall objective is. But I think once, you know, everybody fall back and analyze everything thoroughly, that we'd be all on the same track. Let's get these kids healthy, grown, you know, and come up under our houses, our roofs. That's what we have to do. That's it.
Were you definitely was did any of the different how did as far as now coming back into the rap game, like as far as your approach to things now, and maybe do you have any regrets from anything that you went through, you know, was it all a learning experience as far as maybe the different trials and tribulations or different beefs with different rappers back in the day? Like, what's your approach now coming into back into the streaming era?
I'm more just concerned. Like, last time I came into the game on this major scene, I was connected with other people and their situations and their emotions and their feelings and their relationships or the lack thereof. And it was this time I'm coming back as an individual solely. It's all about me and mine. I don't give a fuck what nobody else got to say, what they think or what they got going on. Nobody beefs with nobody else affects me. And I appreciate that part of this time in the game.
Right. Do any of the things that you speak on your IG Live, you know, ever, I know you say you speak on just facts and not opinions and stuff like that. Do any of the stuff like the fans ask, do that ever cause situations to like bring back up old beef and stuff like that? Because I know the other day I heard you were speaking.
Go ahead. In specific, you heard me speaking on what?
Saying that you were the one that made the game cover up his butterfly tattoo. Like, when people ask you things or when you speak on stuff like that now, do that rekindle beefs or people know that you just speaking?
Yes. I can't say for everybody because the same way you just presented both sides of what people could assume, I'm sure people assume both. I'm no longer concerned with nobody assumes because what the fuck would the Bible writers look like wondering what people was going to think about leaving Judas, what he did in there.
Right.
I don't give a fuck what a nigga think. If you did some whole shit and I remember it and it's Throwback Thursday, guess what? I'm going to remember that whole shit on Throwback Thursday. Fuck who feel about it. I'm not making it up. What I'm supposed to be signed up to keep secrets for all the whole niggas in the world?
Right. Yeah.
I'm not participating in no conspiracy to make sure all the whole shit that these whole niggas did is never spoke on again. I like to think about the good and the bad, reflect on the good and the bad. I've made plenty of mistakes. Sometimes if I have a chance, the opportunity to think about them, I think about them, laugh at them, and reflect on those as well. I'm not going to stray away from doing it on those others that I was have a part. I mean, I played a part in. I witnessed up close. Those are the type of things that you remember on Throwback Thursday. I wonder why everybody gets so sensitive when I talk about my Throwback Thursdays. You feel me?
Right.
Ain't that the whole thing about Throwback Thursdays, for to throw your thoughts back to a time that was?
Yeah.
Shit, it ain't no secret that I made the nigga cover up the motherfucking tattoo. I mean, we all saw it happen.
Yeah.
What else would cover it up? Why would he cover it up before it even healed, my nigga?
I don't know. Like, I really don't. For me,
don't say that, Hicks, man. Don't say that. You're raising a daughter, a 1-year-old daughter. You have to know if you can look at the time frame where this nigga was comfortable putting that butterfly on it. How I responded, and then he covered it up, my nigga. Only he can insert another reason for covering it up. Anybody else being objective knows he covered it up because I got on that ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
He can make up whatever reason. You can make up any hypothetical reason. But we saw what happened, my nigga. You was bold enough to put it on there. I got on that ass and he covered it up. Bottom line.
Yeah. I think maybe because the way you carry yourself and your authenticity that people know come with dealing with Spider-Lo, maybe that's the reason why people take it more serious. Maybe if it was coming from someone's mouth where people didn't respect what they say or they know that this person, because you don't come off as a person that's trolling for attention how some people do online. So people take what you say, like, oh, nah, this nigga speaking the truth, and that may be the reason why they take it a little bit more serious.
I'm glad you used that term trolling, because I have participated in some trolling recently, and I only feel comfortable doing it because this nigga Curtis does it so much, and he's always in somebody's business discussing how Jay-Z didn't handle Benny Siegel correctly, far as it's more than just label shit, it's real nigga shit, this nigga holla rock for life, you don't handle him like that. And you so comfortable discussing all that, Curtis, but what about you and Curtis? Curtis, that's how you handle Curtis. This is G-Unit for death, though. Not rock for life, G-Unit for death, though. Discuss your issues of how you don't handle a real nigga correctly, my nigga. Fuck Jay-Z and Benny Siegel, business that ain't your business, nigga. What about the low, Curtis? Curtis to Curtis. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah. I've seen some people, I don't, and you know, me from the outside looking in, just the interviewer, some people said maybe the connection was wanting to try to get protection out there at that time, and then when he felt like he maybe not didn't need no protection after he blew up and got money or whatever, that's the reason why the distance came.
That's a naive concept. Let me tell you something. That's a naive concept. When I met 50 Cent, he was heavily saturated with the Gray Street Wise Crips, nigga. You can't feel no safer in L.A. than being with the Gray Streets. Not no one spot alone can't make you feel more safe than the whole Jordan Down Projects. I'm sorry, brother. So that's just internet, out-of-town people looking from the outside, looking in. 50 Cent, I couldn't keep what I'm going to keep them safe, huh? The whole Gray Street Crips, stop it. Not me.
Yeah.
I'm just little old me, my kid. I got bars. That nigga met me in a few moments. I rapped a cappella, nigga, and everything happened from there, my nigga. It wasn't no analyzing me being tough or none of that, bro. He offered me a deal because I rapped and drowned him out a cappella right then here on the spot.
Which, we're going through that situation then, with that effect now, you planning on trying to stay independent, or would you go back into another deal after what you experienced then?
I mean, independent or major, it's going to be the right decision regardless, based on terms. Right now, I'm independent and I'm satisfied and I'm happy with the momentum and the progress. I have a team of investors that are almost eliminating the need for a major influence on the situation. Only thing I would probably would like to partner with somebody on the major side, just for expertise. But financially, we good.
Right, right. Definitely. And then before we get up out of here, is there any last things that you want to say? Any, you know, put out your social media again and everything else?
Spider Loke Most Easty is the tag everywhere on all social media. Baymac.bigcartel.com for the clothing. Shout out Two Shares, Franz Farabini. Spider Loke Most Easty, the YouTube channel. We got that posted at the trap video up right now. We got What's Happening posted up right now. Active posted right now. All going coming soon. Politicking the ET on all platforms. Hard copies, get at Trap LA on Instagram. He got special edition hard copies. Shout out to my nigga Crash. Shout out to Eastside Herb, by the way, gang, at all costs. Big Pen, what it do? Melvin Butler home. The bag done touched down, y'all. Niggas in trouble. If you don't know who he is, go do your research. Shout out Big Meech. And we just get money. Merc Dawg, what it do? Puto, we gonna eat, my nigga. It's at all costs over here. Fuck the rest. You either with us or against us.